I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Orla.
And I'm Andrea. Coming up on the show today, social media detox, how to do it, and what are the benefits? We're going to chat with clinical psychologist here in Montreal, Anna Maria Tosco, and neuroscientist Dr. Cindy Hovington will join us to chat about the one thing that we do wrong as parents that causes us the most stress.
Plus, there's a fantastic immersive Disney animation show here in Montreal that kids are just going nuts over. So we'll chat to producer Barry Garber all about that. But first, spring is coming, I promise you. And with that comes new style, and who better than fashion and style expert Hans Koschling to tell us more about it. Welcome back to the show, Hans.
Welcome, hello. That's right from the fashion desk.
100%.
Into the trend report for spring 2024. Here we are.
That's right. So tell us, what should we be putting in our wardrobes for spring 2024?
Well, I think it's interesting to say, but the word preppy is back.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Lots of polo neck dresses, lots of polo dressing and preppy dresses. Preppy dressing for men and women is back in style.
That sounds very British to me. That sounds very, very British. My husband isn't into the polo neck thing. He thinks that, like, he likes the sexy low cut thing.
Oh, you mean for you or for him?
For me.
Well, you know, it's an influence of it. So you're looking at polo neck dresses. They still can be very, you know, shapely. But the same thing,
right.
polo necks are really bad, really big time. And also the preppy dressing is back. So in other words, you know, the collegiate, you know, even the all-American preppiness to, you know, collegiate looking trend is really strong this spring.
Wow. And I saw that headbands are also back.
Can
now,
you believe
how,
it?
How
headbands?
Do you do this if
I
you're
love
not?
Headbands.
Okay, but like seriously, if you're not a 9-year-old girl, how do you rock a headband tastefully?
I rock a headband.
You know what you do, and I'm sorry, and you look wonderful in it.
Well, it depends
really,
on
I'm a 29-year-old girl.
Well, I think it all depends on the headband you're wearing. I mean, you know, it has to kind of work with your wardrobe. We can't just throw in anything on the head. Like, it's, you know, you've got to figure out what works for you. Also, and how you wear it. Is it in front of the ears, the back of the ears? Usually it's better to you wear it over your ears if it's short. If it's longer, more of a couture, more of a, you know, sensible, you know, headband, then you don't forget the accessories. Earrings look great with headbands.
So, Hans, tell us, when it comes to colors, what are you seeing as being the spring 24 trend when it comes to colors?
Well, first of all, we are looking at a strong, strong white. White is very, very strong. And also, you're looking at the opposite, the complete serious, deep black. Mm. So that's really the two strong components of the present time. And that's where we're heading. But also, you're looking at the pale blues and fuchsias and pinks and oranges. And also keep in mind that, you know, we are also, again, looking into the metallics are going to be back strong, very strong this year.
And not just as accessories, eh? Like, I'm seeing a lot of silver pants, and, like, I'm tempted here.
I've got a pair of silver pants.
Ooh.
I've got a pair of silver pants, and I love them, and every time I wear them, like, they're actually, like, silver jeans. They're great, but I love, people go, wow, where'd you get those pants? But silver, and also in skirts and dresses, but the thing is, it's also how you wear it. It's easy, you can be practical, you make it very sporty, or you can dress it up. It's really about adding some shine to your wardrobe.
So, Hans, over the last couple of years, we've gone from the oversized look, you know, with the everyone's at home from COVID, eating too much. We've gone through the sexy look. I find last year was a very short skirt, sexy look. Are we moving to a more covered up preppy look?
No, we're looking at an over elongated look. The silhouette has changed. In other words, you're looking at longer shapes. So instead of being bulky, now you're looking at more of an elongated shape. And that really seems to help us all because it's going to make us all long, tall, and lean. But the thing is, it's how it's done to elongate the shape of the body. So in other words, you know, there would definitely be dresses that have that accentuation. And of course, layerings will help. And there's always the fact that, you know, the blazer will also still, you know, be in shape. But then at that point, you're wearing a short skirt or just the blazer and a pair of great, you know, heels. It's the way you put it together. It's just more shapely. You can belt it even.
And Hans, what about crop tops? I know this has been a trend now.
That's believe it or not, they're back.
Okay, so how do we wear this while still looking tasteful?
Love crop tops. I love crop tops.
Well, I think it's a matter of also understanding how it's put in your wardrobe. You can wear a crop top. I think it's also a matter of how you shape yourself and how you put it together. But it can be worn with a high waisted pant or a skirt. But high waisted pants are really back in style as well.
Thank God. I'm like, anytime I see the low rise, like I'm not getting on board. It's not happening.
Well, it's also the fact that, you know, you're looking at the way it's done. So let's say you're wearing a crop top, high waist pair of pants, you add a great saddlebag to that, or you add a great purse and, you know, a blazer over the shoulder and out the door. It's that kind of feel that you're looking at. It's casual chic, you know?
You're listening to Now Trending. I'm Orla alongside Andrea, and we are chatting with fashion and style expert Hans Koschling. Hans, I love wearing the crop top with the high-waisted look. I just think that's a clean-cut, sexy, shapely silhouette. I absolutely love that. I'm seeing a lot online. There's still a lot of leopard print around for this season.
Leopard print you do find, but you'll find a lot of leather as well. Leather is coming a huge comeback.
Yes.
And you'll find that in skirts, you find that in high boots, you can find that in vests, in blazers, jackets. It's back strong, but also it all depends on how you again accessorize. You're wearing it with just a simple white shirt, a t-shirt, a crop top. It's how you accessorize. It's the shinier skin that you're wearing that's going to accentuate that trend.
Okay, speaking of accessorizing, what are we looking at for handbags this spring? What are the top trends there? I'm a handbag girl through and through.
She's got a pen ready to make the notes.
I'm a shoe guy. You should see my closet. It's just too many shoes. You know, in bags, we're definitely looking at bags. They're not necessarily as big as they were before. You'll find the occasional extra large bag, but you'll find practical things now. Much more practical things you can fit stuff in. So you can find bags, medium shapes like the Birkins, and you can find yourself the other bags that are maybe more for daytime and evening. You'll find that more of an easier accessory now. You'll find that by being to accessorize your daily looks. So in other words, you go from day to night in the same bag.
Are crossbody bags on their way out? I mean, they're so practical, but I'm seeing a lot of shoulder bags and top handles right now.
Well, you'll find that actually for spring, you'll find a lot more carry bags that are available to you now as choices as well, because I mean, you may have that bag from last season, but this season it's going to be more practical.
Hans, let's talk about men's style. What's coming in there for spring 24?
Well, believe it or not, you'll find a lot more silk layers, and you'll find bomber jackets and, of course, you know, leather jackets are back in style, leather pants, and you'll find leather pants, for example, worn with exactly like a plain white shirt or this a blazer, that's a simple blazer over. It's simplifying again the silhouette, again, longer, and the pants are higher waisted as well. And some of these, you'll find actually pleated pants back in style.
So, Hans, if you had to invest in one or two items this season, what would be your top picks?
A double-breasted blazer.
Oh, interesting.
Is that for a man and a woman?
For both, yes, absolutely.
Oh, for both, right.
But keep in mind that the double-breasted blazers that we know that are really tight-fitting is not the style. It's something that's more of a slouch crossover that you're looking for. Something that's easy, right. That's comfortable. That you can then, for example, wear a pair of shorts, or you can wear them with a skirt, or a man just with a pair of pants or shorts. And I think that's, we have to look at it that way. But you can take that blazer from, again, dressing it up to the office, or bringing it out to a cocktail or for an evening. It's, again, it's the way it's cut. It's nothing. And if you wanted to be tight-fitting, well, then belt it.
Hans, this is all great, great advice. Andrea's going to go online shopping. Me as well. Really appreciate you dropping by and giving us the update of what should be hanging in our closet for spring 24.
It's my absolute pleasure, and I think we should all have a great look in our closet and what we have and what we need to add to it. So I think that's a matter of maybe going through other things and maybe making some room for some new.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm going to have you over, Hans. You're going to have to go through my stuff.
My pleasure. Pop the champagne, I'll be there.
Oh, no problem. Andrea will probably tag along.
Count me in, too.
We'll do a sale at the end of the day. All right.
That's
so live from the fashion desk. I love you guys, and look forward to seeing you at spring.
Yes, we love you
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. That's fashion and style expert Hans Koschling. You can follow Hans on Instagram at The Image Is Official. Coming up, why you should be doing a social media detox, or should you? But first, let's take a look at the roads.
Welcome back. I'm Andrea, along with Orla. So, have you been thinking about breaking up with social media? Some people don't realize how social media is affecting them until they're actually off it. So how does a social media detox work? Joining us now is clinical psychologist Anna Maria Tosco. Welcome back.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I know that this is probably a relevant topic for a lot of people. So let's talk about how badly social media can get for some people when it comes to their mental health.
Yeah. So the thing is, the answer that I'm going to be providing with you guys today might be a little bit kind of non-conventional, because I don't know how you guys experience, social media use, but I almost feel there's this dichotomy. It's either we're on it and we're ignoring any consequences and we don't care, or we're off it. It's kind of a cold turkey. We got to get off it. And I just think that that's such a limited way to see it. And I think we need to start thinking about social media like we do things like food or drink. You know, we need protein. Absolutely. We need carbs. Absolutely. We need water. We have to monitor our sugar. And some of us can't eat sugar at all with drinking. I mean, what are we drinking? When are we drinking? How much are we drinking? And truth of the matter is, like for me, for example, I cannot drink red wine. Gives me a migraine. Can't do it. And some of us can't drink at all. So I think it's misguided or it's short-sighted for us to not approach social media in this way. A lot of experts say, don't get up in the morning and check your phone. I completely understand that. And for a lot of us, that's true. But sometimes, I know for me, I'm waking up and I'm accessing my phone to actually kickstart my meditation or to kickstart, I'm watching a motivational guru of sorts to get my gratitude journal going. So again, there's this self-monitoring approach and self-regulation that I think is necessary. Also, again, who's the person you're watching? What are you watching? How susceptible are you? How vulnerable are you right now? How fragile are you? If you're feeling low, probably not a good idea to take advice from somebody you don't trust. And then for some of us, we can't go on social media, or we have to do some kind of detox because we might be developing an addiction.
Very interesting, Anna Maria. One point I'm just going to come back to before we go on to the social media detox is trusting people. There are people that look at social media and they trust the advice of some of these influencers. Yeah. It is not to be trusted. But how do you know who to trust and who not to trust on your little screen?
Exactly. It's such a great point. And I've had this conversation a lot where if I get on social media and I'm a clinical psychologist, great. I have an ethical code to abide by. So it is this self-monitoring thing I want to bring to light. Self-monitoring, self-regulating also involves questioning that. And the truth is, there's no real way to know. You could do your research, and maybe we should be doing more research, because when it is somebody who is not part of a professional order or hasn't got the training, they also don't have the kind of ethical code to go with it. I am not going to disparage anyone. I have clients, ladies, who are on TikTok and sometimes they find community or they find a Facebook forum that actually makes them feel better. So I'm not disparaging that. But yes, more self-monitoring, more research is needed if you're really kind of going down the rabbit hole with these teachers that you don't trust quite yet.
So, Anna Maria, do you recommend doing a social media detox if you think that you're starting to develop a negative relationship with your social media?
Yeah. So basically, I went to the research, and people will be shocked to find out that there's no common thread necessarily about the negative effects. What they have found, though, is that there can be a decrease in depressive symptoms, a relationship with obesity, obviously less social support, less social skills. And if you're finding that your social media use is actually inhibiting your functioning, kind of like when we realize, wow, I have a problem with food, or every time I get emotional, I binge, or, every time I feel bad, I want to drink. There is this idea of, okay, well, if I am starting to feel that way, if I can't get off my phone, if somehow it's actually affecting my work in a real way or school in a real way where I'm not delivering and I'm getting a bad performance reviews, et cetera, then yes, of course, more self-monitoring. And there's also, for some people who, there's treatment for technology addiction actually exists. And I found out a little bit about that.
Wow. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Because I talk to a lot of parents who say once they take that iPad away from their kids, they get so grumpy, borderline aggressive. Like, is that a symptom that you are on your yes. YouTube or technology business? I don't even know how to say it because it's so frustrating. Yep. I'm like, get off the bloody iPad.
Which is why, like, okay, I don't want to get too extreme, but thanks for saying that, Orla. Truth of the matter is, if somebody's addicted to heroin, you know where we're going after? We're not going cold turkey. We're going to methadone. You know what I mean? So the reason why I'm saying that is because I'm not surprised people are like, when they take their social media away, they get aggressive because you can't go cold turkey. You know, I hate to say it this way, but the brain can have withdrawal symptoms for something that you've had a dependency for. So that's what I mean by this kind of self-monitoring, self-evaluation, and all this, especially with young people, though. Young people need help. So where the research is not mixed on is the fact that with young people, developing brains, brain regions involved in self-control don't develop until later adolescence. So yes, we're talking about, you know, a problem with executive functioning, academic performance, quality of interactions, language development, right, sleep disorders. So the findings are in there with developing brains. So yes, you know, boundaries are necessary, but to consider individual differences as well. And I want to say again, please be careful with cold turkey, because I want to come full circle to say, once we realize social media is a problem for us or for our kids, it's almost like we panic. God, get them off their devices. Like, have a plan. Okay, progressive, not cold turkey.
What are some signs that you might need to go down this road? Like, I feel like I have a decent relationship with social media. I like looking at the fashion accounts that I follow and, you know, things like that. It doesn't make me feel badly about myself. However, I do spend probably too much time on it. Like, what are the warning signs here?
Yeah. So, again, the warning signs, because I'm an advocate for, you know, some of us can be okay, you know, with social media. Like I said, like Andrea, if you have a passion for fashion, you know, and I love that. Like, you know, fashion is art. Fashion is pleasure. Fashion. So, and for me, if I'm getting up in the morning and I'm going to my motivational speakers or my gurus or whatever, there's nothing wrong with that. It becomes a problem when it gets to the level of dependency or addiction where it's actually stopping you from functioning normally. And this is the barometer for everything, like, you know, for addiction, for mental illness, right? People say, well, how do I know I'm depressed and not sad? Is it affecting you on a daily basis to the point where you can't function normally? And in order to know whether or not you're functioning normally, that's when you have to kick in the self-monitoring. How am I doing? And also, there are apps. If you really want to know if it's a problem, there are actually apps that can tell you how long you've been on, you know, and I'm actually still looking for, so if anybody out there has information, but I'm still looking for an app that not only involves the behavioral component of screen time, I want the emotional component. Like, I want people to be able to journal how they're feeling and when they're going to social media. So I want emotions and behavior to get a better tag on what we're doing.
Anna Maria, we have about a minute left, but I think it's really important that we quickly cover, how does one go about doing a social media detox?
So social media detox essentially involves, I sound like a broken record here, but it involves mindfulness first. Mindfulness first, dealing with your emotions first to see if it's needed. And then if it is needed, I say progression. I say slowly but surely. I say time yourself, check out your behavior, and if you can, slowly limit your screen time progressively if you think it's a problem. Because like we said before, we could just get angry, emotional if it's cold turkey. So I say social media detox involves being kind and progressive, slow, just like exposure therapy. Keep it slow, you know, one thing at a time, one step at a time.
Anna Maria, such valuable insight. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, ladies.
That's clinical psychologist Anna Maria Tosco. Coming up, one thing that we do wrong as parents that can cause us the most stress. Neuroscientist Dr. Cindy Hovington will join us. But first, the latest from the CTV Montreal newsroom.
Welcome back. I'm Orla alongside Andrea. Now, there is one thing we do wrong as parents that causes us more stress than anything else. And here to tell us more is neuroscientist Dr. Cindy Hovington. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Hovington. And please put us out of our misery and tell us what this one thing is.
You know, I want to make sure that I don't want parents to feel bad. It's one thing that we can change that could make things a little bit easier for us. And I find that sometimes we get stuck on these like autopilot, you know, days, weeks, months, years where, you know, we're stuck in these cycles and we have to really step back and reflect. And when we pause and we reflect on something that's happening, and when we pause and we reflect on a problem that we're having or something that's happening in our life, whether it's with our child and their behavior or with us, it actually gives us the time and the freedom to plan it out, to problem solve through it. And I find that we don't do that enough. And that's what leads to us getting stuck in these really difficult cycles.
So how do we break the cycle?
Yeah. So that pause is the first one. So let's just say, whether it's about our child or a part of our life, I'll often hear parents say, I'm very stressed about work. And I ask them to break that down. So whether you say, I'm stressed at home, I'm stressed at work, I'm overwhelmed by my child's behavior, we need to become more specific. And that's the first part. When we're more specific, it allows us to have more words to what's happening, right? So I'm stressed at work because which aspect of it? Is it a certain colleague? Is it the workload? Is it the lack of flexibility? What is it specifically? Same thing with our kids. If we say, I'm really struggling with my child, which part of it? It's their behavior. Which aspect of their behavior? It's their anger. When is it happening? And when we start to question when, where, how, what's causing it, what's the trigger around it, we have a little bit more data for us to kind of work on that issue. And, you know, something that comes to mind is this, we call it like the circle of control. Sometimes we feel overwhelmed or stressed by something, whether it's, you know, with life or with our child, because we don't feel that we have control. But it's not about having control or not. There are things in between where we have also influence around something. And when we stop and pause and reflect on what's happening, we're able to say, we don't have control over this, but I do have control over that, and I have influence over this. And I find that that helps reduce a lot of the stress around things that are happening in our lives or with our kids.
So, Cindy, how important is it for parents to connect with their children? And can you share some examples of how parents can do this? Because connecting with your child is a key part of this, right?
It really is. But even before connecting with our kid, we need to connect with ourselves, right? Like, we need to take the time to connect with ourselves. But I want to make sure that parents know, like, when we say connect with your child, I was recently talking to a researcher from Colorado, and her research showed that 10 minutes a day is more than enough in terms of connecting with your child and building that relationship with them. So it's not about 3 hours. I don't want parents to feel that they have so much more to put on their plates. It's not about that. But
right.
Can that car ride coming home be a moment of connection? Can bedtime become a moment of connection? Can dinner time become a moment of connection? And when we do take time to connect and just be present with our child, taking away screens, phones, turning it off, having moments when we're having a conversation and we're not interrogating them. There's a very big difference. I was talking to a teenager the other day and she was saying how, you know, at dinner time, my parents seem to like interrogate me and question me about everything. And it's frustrating. And it's truly about like asking them questions about their day. Like, not just saying like, how was it? You know, like saying, what was your favorite part of your day? Or what are some challenges you're facing this week? You know, do you need help
right.
with anything? And I think when we have those conversations, that's where the connection comes in.
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, as adults, we often connect through conversations. But I think
yes.
for kids, they might try to connect with us in ways that are less verbal, right?
Yes.
So can you give us some idea or some examples maybe of ways that our kids might be trying to connect with us that we might not necessarily pick up on as connections?
Oh, yeah. It definitely comes from their behavior as well, right? With young kids, let's say 6 and under, obviously they'll say things like, do you want to play with me? So that's their way of saying, hey, I want to spend time with you.
And it's okay not to have the time to do it, but you can say, I can't right now, but I really want to play with you, and I want to take some time after dinner, and taking that 10 minutes. With older kids, sometimes it's much harder to see it because we'll see it as a behavioral issue. And that behavior is usually trying to communicate something to us, but it's really hard to see past it. And that's why the pausing and reflecting can help you. But a child who's you know, spending more time alone or is behaving in a way that you don't understand and that's out of their norm, that's sometimes a way of a child saying, I need you right now, and I don't even know that I need you. Even like a child who's misbehaving a lot, you know, let's say between the ages of 6 to 9, out of the blue kind of misbehavior can be a way of them saying, I'm anxious about something, but I don't know how to cope with that emotion or even identify it and understand it. So those usually are moments that they're trying to say, like, I need you as my coach and my guide right now.
You're listening to Now Trending. I'm Orla alongside Andrea, and we are chatting with neuroscience Dr. Cindy Hovington. It's so interesting what you initially said about, you know, it just takes 10 minutes a day to spend time with your child. Because I think as parents, you think, oh my goodness, I need to be spending hours upon hours, otherwise I feel guilty. But maybe if we roll it back, take baby steps and just focus on that 10 minutes a day with each child, I think it makes a huge difference. I try and do it at bedtime, you know, once everything's been done, the dinner, the bath time, the getting the clothes for the next day. And sometimes you can see them coming to you. And instead of me saying, go back to your bed, you got to go to sleep, I say, okay, come and sit with me. Let's have a little time. And just the joy on their faces that you've given them that time. You sit, and I'm also very mindful, instead of saying, how was your day? You know, I do say, how was the maths test? How was the lunchtime? Who did you play with? And you're right, being more specific is much, you achieve so much more.
It really does. And I think of people who have like these habit, you know, trackers, and they put like, did I hydrate myself today? They add, you know, did I exercise? Did I sleep 8 hours? I want people to add that 10 minutes of connection with each child and with themselves. Once your child goes to bed, take the time also to connect with yourself. Like, what is something that brings you joy? And the same way that you said, like, your child's eyes light up, we feel good too. We get that dopamine hit of like, ah, finally, like, I'm having the tea that I was waiting for all day, or the glass of wine, whatever it is.
Andrea's ears just perked up again.
But it's that moment for you. And we don't need to step out every weekend, all weekend, you know, like to get a break from our kids. But we do need to take every day to say like, hey, today you had a hard day today, to yourself, right? To say that to yourself and connect with yourself. And I think that sometimes we get stuck also with our kids to fill out, like, you know, fill up days and weekends and nights with activities. Mm-hmm. And just be mindful of if that is the weekend or the weeknight, did I take 10 minutes to connect with them? And those conversations, I guarantee, like, that's where all the connection happens between the parent and the child. And that's where they develop that trust. You know, that sort of, I can talk to my parent and I can say anything to them. Those 10 minutes, that's what it shows them, that you're there for them, and you're there to listen attentively and you know, you're present.
Cindy, this is such great advice, and I really hope anyone listening really does take on board and try the 10 minutes a day. Thank you so much for your time, Cindy.
Thank you both for having me again.
That's neuroscientist Dr. Cindy Hovington, who has an amazing podcast called Curious Neuron. Coming up, there's a great Disney animation exhibition here in Montreal, and the kids are just falling in love with it. But first, let's take a look at the roads. Welcome back. I'm Orla alongside Andrea. Now, there is a new Disney immersive animation exhibit here in Montreal at the Arsenal Contemporary Art that kids, including my own, are in awe of. They absolutely loved the experience. And joining us now to tell us more is producer Barry Garber. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Orla.
Well, congratulations on a fantastic Disney animation, immersive animation exhibit, because I took George and Chloe, and just the magic and the lighting up in their eyes and their faces and the running around. They absolutely loved it. So tell us what the immersive animation show is all about and why kids are just loving it.
Oh, I know. And I was happy to see that firsthand, Orla, when you came to the opening with the kids. And it was really, really fun to see that reaction from them and from kids of all ages, really, who have been coming. It's a unique experience. You know, it's the 100 years of Disney, so people really have a lot of the benefit of seeing a lot of the characters, a lot of the personalities, a lot of the music that they've known and loved growing up through the years and even to today. You've got a really good cross-section of Disney folk from, you know, from yesteryear, from today. And people love coming not only to relive what they saw on film, but also because there's a historical element to it. There's a section where you can come in and you can experience how the animation is done, how everything was originated, how the characters were actually created on paper before they get onto the screen. And we also have, as you know and as you experienced, an area where the kids can actually do drawings themselves and then actually see yes. these drawings superimposed on different backgrounds and so forth. So they feel like they can get into the animation world themselves. So we like to let people know that there's all of these different things on offer when you come to Disney Immersive Animation.
Can you talk to us, Barry, a little bit about the immersive part of it? Like, what does that mean and what can people expect to experience?
Well, immersive means, I mean, aside from coming in, seeing the history and participating maybe in some of the physical drawing and so forth, you ultimately come in, and the main part of the experience, Andrea, is you come into this very large immersive room where during the course of the time you spend there, and that section of it is about 30 minutes. The whole experience is about an hour to an hour and a quarter. But that section of it is you are literally surrounded ceiling to floor, wall to wall, by images, music, bubbles, snowflakes, moving imagery that takes you through all the years of Disney and all your favorite films and the music of those films.
Yeah, it was really, really cool and magical when the bubbles started falling down. And all these little
kids. Well, yeah, because then the kids really feel like they've stepped into that universe. They're really inside of it. And if you recall, Orla, when you're in there and you're actually surrounded by all this, that is the immersive part, because you were immersed literally into the Disney world, and where, you know, the small children who are freely roaming around that room. The room is so large, the kids like to wander, and, you know, as long as the parents are okay with it and they're within eyesight, it's a very safe and very congenial space to wander around in. So the kids feel like they're wandering into the world of Disney, which is great.
You're listening to Now Trending. I'm Orla alongside Andrea, and we are chatting with producer Barry Garber about a new Disney immersive animation exhibit here in Montreal at Arsenal Contemporary Art. Now, behind the scenes, Barry, in putting the exhibit together, there was quite a top-level team of Disney animators involved. Tell us about how it all got started.
Well, it actually all got started in Los Angeles at Disney headquarters, and you have some of the original animators who actually worked on some of these films decades ago, who were involved in the creation of this experience, and who actually came to Montreal to celebrate the opening here. And I should mention, you know, special props to the city of Montreal. We are by far the city that had the fastest sales, the fastest reaction upon opening of this exhibition. It's playing now all over the United States and, in fact, in many different countries around the world. But for some reason, Montreal responded so quickly. And I like to think because we're a real cultural mecca, we like going to new experiences. And the fact that this one is the first time Disney ever created something like this and everyone recognizes the Disney name was very helpful. But we've extended because of it, and we've extended quite a long time. We were meant to be here for 3 months, and we're going to actually stay, when it's all said and done, probably close to 7 months in Montreal. We're now open until the 5th of May. So I'm very excited to share that news as well.
That is exciting. And for people interested in attending, do they buy tickets online or can they purchase them at the door? How does it work?
Well, you can do both. It's a little more convenient to do it online. And then, you know, you really can sort of take your time and sit and look at the menu, because there's different time slots throughout the day, most every day, and extra hours added during the spring break time, which is coming in the month of March. And then you pick your time and look at all your options. But if you're a last minute kind of a person and you suddenly realize, oh, wow, I'm in the neighborhood, I'm downtown, I'm in Griffintown, I want to pop over there, you can also buy on site.
Wonderful. Very exciting stuff. Congratulations. And I'm really looking forward to checking it out myself.
Please, Andrea, we'd love to welcome you. Please,
Thank you.
Come and please. And you can bring kids or not bring kids. Some people like to just come on their own and enjoy it themselves and not be distracted by the kids. But by all means, it's for kids of all ages.
Amazing. And we're all kids right at heart.
Yeah, I think so.
Thanks so much for your time today, Barry. That is producer Barry Garber. And we, of course, were speaking about the Disney Immersive Animation Exhibit on here in Montreal until May. For tickets, you can visit arsenalcontemporary.com. And of course, that is all we have time for today, folks. Thank you so much for spending part of your Sunday with us. We'll be back at the same time next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Now Trending Show. Have a great week.